delivered. Come quickly.
What is it? Joe, what on earth is the matter?
It's Harry, Mr. Rivers. There's been a terrible accident.
Accident? Where?
In the yard. I think the brakes on my van must have failed. It ran down the slope and hit him.
Hit him? Is he badly hurt?
I think he's dead.
It's time for you to take your place on the jury as Bristol Myers, makers of New Ban Roll-On and New Ban Aerosol Spray Deodorant, Clairol Hair Care Products, and Itana Toothpaste, invite you to... consider your verdict.
Gentlemen of the jury, the case of the Crown is that on the morning of May the 24th, 1967, Joseph Hardy did cause the death of Harry Oakes by crushing him between the rear of a one-ton lorry and the wall of the loading platform in the yard of the A1 Dairies of Hemel Hempstead. We will bring evidence to show that there had been an intense rivalry between Hardy and the dead man for the hand of Miss Eileen Carter. The method employed by Hardy was particularly diabolical, in that there was every chance that the crime might well have been accepted as an accident, in which case the worst that the prisoner at the bar could have suffered would have been a censure of carelessness by the coroner or a minor charge of negligence. This might well have been the case, and the charge of murder might never have reached this court had it not been for the intensive investigations of my first witness, Detective Inspector Robbins. Inspector Robbins, you were not initially called on this case. Perhaps you would explain to the court how you came to be involved?
As a result of a phone call by Mr. Rivers, manager of the A1 Dairies, Sergeant Gerard was sent to investigate. Gerard, by a strange coincidence, is the brother-in-law of the dead man. Having immediately assured himself that Oakes was dead, he contacted me by telephone as he felt that in view of the relationship, he was unsuitable to carry out the investigation.
I see. Will you now describe what you found on arrival at the A1 Dairies?
The dairy turns off Acorn Lane. Just inside the gate is a building which is a combined storeroom and locker room for the employees of the dairy. The road then declines at the rate of 1 in 6 for some 50 feet into the loading yard. The bottling shed is at the far end of the yard with a platform about waist high in front of it. The crates of bottles are run on rollers from the shed onto this platform in readiness for loading onto the lorry.
The normal procedure then would be for lorries to drive down the slope, turn in the yard, reverse against the platform, be loaded, and then drive out again into Acorn Lane.
That is so.
Please continue, Inspector.
At the time of his death, Oakes had been standing on the ground in the yard with his back to the slope, using the platform as a desk on which to make entries on his record sheets. When I arrived, the lorry was standing facing up the slope and about 6 feet away from where the body was lying. I questioned Mr. Rivers, the manager. How did this happen, Mr. Rivers?
It's a terrible thing. I really can't understand it. And with everyone knowing how Joe felt about Harry Oakes, no one will believe it was an accident. It could be anything else.
That is what he said. No one will believe it was an accident.
Yes, sir. Naturally, I asked him what he meant by such a statement.
Well, there was no love lost between the two of them since Eileen Carter decided to marry Harry Oakes. Only last Thursday, I came across them having a blazing row. Leastways, Joe was shouting and Harry was trying to calm him down.
Did you hear any threats of violence?
No, I can't say that. But I'm sure the row was over Eileen.
I see. Now, tell me how this accident happened.
You'll have to ask Joe. I was in my office at the time, and the first I knew about it was when he came hammering on the door. He says that he got out of the lorry at the top of the rise, and the brakes must have slipped and let it run backwards. But talk to Joe, he's waiting in my office.
When you arrived, was Oakes dead?
I'm sure of it. He was crushed between the platform and the back of the lorry. I told Joe to pull the lorry forward to release him. I tried to hold the body up, but even with the help of a couple of men from the bottling shed, it was too much for us. And when the lorry pulled away, he just slumped down onto the ground. I'm sure there was nothing we could have done for him. Then I went and rang the police.
Does the medical evidence support the theory that Oakes was already dead?
Yes, sir. In simple terms, the autopsy report states that the spinal cord was snapped and that several vital organs had been crushed. Death must have been instantaneous.
One moment. Are you not submitting the official report to the court?
I am, Lord, and it is not disputed by the defense.
Is that so, Mr. Clark?
No, we accept the report, Lord.
Very well. You may proceed, Sir Avery.
Thank you, Lord. Inspector, did you then interview the prisoner, Joseph Hardy?
Yes, sir. As soon as I'd made arrangements for the removal of the body, I asked Mr. Rivers to show me the way to his office. Hardy was sitting there. He seemed very calm and completely in possession of himself. This is a terrible thing, Mr. Hardy. Perhaps you can tell me what's actually happened.
It's the brakes. They're pretty worn. But I swear I pulled them right on. They just can't have held properly on that slope.
Let's go right back to the beginning. You had been loading the lorry, and then...
That's right. Harry had checked the load, and I was just off. The first call is our own shop in the High Street. They take 48 gallons. Well, I'd almost got out of the gate when I remembered I'd left a packet of fags in my locker. So I stopped and got out the cab.
Leaving the motor running?
Yeah. Well, I was only going to be a minute. I got to the door of the locker room, and then something made me look around. The lorry was rolling back down the slope. Well, I started to see if I could run and jump back into the cab, but I was too late. Then there was the crash and that ghastly crunching sound. I didn't know Harry was there. The lorry was between me and the platform, and I never saw him to shout and warn him.
Tell me, had the brake given trouble before?
Well, like I said, it was worn. But if you gave it a good tug, it always held.
Had you mentioned it to anyone?
No.
Why not?
Well, it didn't seem so bad. Anyway, the lorry's due for servicing soon. I'd have told them then. We always have to make out a list of things for them to check.
What is this I hear about you and Oakes not being on good terms?
I wouldn't go as far as that. You know how it is. I thought I had a chance with Eileen Carter, and it turned out she preferred Harry.
Yes. Now, getting back to the lorry, why didn't you stop it on that bit of level ground just inside the gate?
Well, I thought I had. The back wheels must still have been on the slope. Anyway, I didn't give it much thought. As I said, I put the brakes on. Now, look here, Inspector. You're not suggesting I knew it might run back.
I'm not suggesting anything, Mr. Hardy. I'm just trying to sort out how this can have happened.
Well, it's just like I told you. The brakes must have slipped. That slope is very dangerous. There's no end of an effort driving up when you've got a full load. And the yard itself is far too small. With the big lorries we use now, you can hardly turn them without breaking your arms, pulling at the wheel.
So initially, despite a slightly truculent attitude by Hardy, you had no valid reason to suspect that you were investigating anything other than an accident.
That is so.
What caused you to change your mind?
As is usual in cases of this nature, I had the lorry removed so that the brakes could be tested. The report confirmed that they were well worn and that unless the brakes were pulled on to the top notch, there was a tendency for them not to hold.
Confirming the original theory.
So it would seem.
But you were not convinced.
I was worried about some considerable buckling of the tailboard of the lorry. Buckling which made it difficult for the tailboard to be lowered and raised. This fact made me feel certain that the damage had been done at the time of the accident. I phoned Mr. Rivers and made an appointment with him to return the lorry at a time when the dairy was closed. Sorry to call you back here at this time, but there are a couple of things I'd like you to help me clear up.
Certainly. But I don't quite see what more I can tell you.
Well, would you mind coming over here, Mr. Rivers? Now, you see this dent in the tailboard? Is it new, or has it been there for some time?
New, I think. I don't remember seeing it there before.
I think so, too. You can hardly move a tailboard with that buckle in it. It jams against the uprights. Now, let's go over to the platform. Now, this is the mark we made of where Oakes was dead.
Yes.
Look at that brickwork on the platform there. It's been hit by something pretty hard and, well, pretty recently.
Certainly looks like it. What exactly are you trying to say?
Well, I'm not so sure myself yet, but with your permission, I'd like to carry out a couple of experiments. I had a model made up by the laboratory in the lorry. Now, it's made with the same density as the human body. Now, I'm going to lean it just here where Oates was standing. With your permission, I'm going to risk doing some more damage to the lorry by letting it run back from the top of the slope.
I see. Yes, certainly. Carry on. Well,
thank you, Mr. Rivers. You know, this may be very interesting. This should be about the same there. Right, stand there. I'm going to take the brake off.
And what did this experiment prove?
Rolling down the slope, the lorry did damage to the model. Probably sufficient to break a human back. But the cushioning effect of the dummy body was sufficient to stop any noticeable damage being done to the brickwork of the platform. I repeated the experiment several times, and it wasn't until I reversed the lorry at full throttle that similar marks were made on the platform.
And as a result of this, you swore out a warrant for the arrest of Joseph Harding.
Yes.
Thank you, Inspector, that's all.
I think that this is a suitable time to call for an adjournment.
Counsel for the defense rises to cross-examine the inspector.
Inspector, you stated earlier that Sergeant Gerard withdrew from the investigation in view of the fact that he was the dead man's brother-in-law.
That is correct.
It was felt that he might find it difficult to retain an impartiality.
You could put it like that.
I do put it like that, but never mind. Is it not also a fact that you acted as best man to Sergeant Gerard on the occasion of his marriage?
And that is so.
Then you yourself may be said to be closely concerned with the dead man.
No, sir. I admit that Sergeant Gerard and I have been friendly for years, but I have only occasionally met his wife, apart from the actual wedding, and I have had no contact with her family.
I see. So you can honestly say you entered this case without prejudice?
I can. In a small town like Hemel Hempstead, you get to know a great many people, but as far as my work is concerned, I'm only interested in facts and the truth.
There is no need to justify yourself, Inspector. A simple yes or no would have sufficed.
Well, all I must protest is the attack being made on the witness, my learned friend.
I agree. Mr. Clark, I see no justification for the tone you are adopting.
I apologize for that.
Inspector, I will accept that you carried out your duties in an open-minded manner. Let us move on to these experiments, which would seem to be the sole reason for doubting the veracity of my client. Are you positive that the conditions in which you carried them out were identical to those at the time of the accident?
As far as was possible, yes.
Perhaps you would care to amplify that statement.
As I said, the dummy was of the same density and resilience as that of a man of the same weight and height as the dead man. No alteration had been made to the condition of the brakes, and the lorry was loaded in a similar manner to that which it had been at the time of the accident.
I see. But can you assure the court that the angle of approach was the same? Is it not possible that had the lorry hit the wall at a greater angle, these marks on the brickwork could have been caused before the cushioning effect of the body took effect?
No, sir. Several runs were made for possible angles at the top of the slope, and it was only when the lorry was driven in gear that any such marks were made.
And my client, at any time, either before or after his arrest, there is his original story of how the accident occurred?
No.
What was his attitude at the time of the arrest?
Well, he seemed amazed, almost dazed. He was at his lodgings at the time, and I gave him the usual warning, but he didn't seem in the least disinclined to talk.
But this is rubbish, Inspector. I've told you what happened. I just got out of the cab to go and get the fags, and the next thing I knew, the lorry was running backwards.
I know, you told us that before. You're sure you don't want to change your statement?
Well, why should I? It's the truth. Everyone thinks I had it in for Harry because of Arlene. Well, maybe I had. But what I've told you about the lorry is the truth.
And yet, despite this obvious attitude of shocked innocence, you persisted in taking my client into custody.
Yes.
No further questions.
I now call Miss Eileen Carter. Miss Carter, over the last 2 years, you've been well acquainted with both the unfortunate victim in this case and also the prisoner at the bar, Joseph Hardy. Will the witness please speak up? Miss Carter, I know that this must be distressing for you, and I will try and be as brief as possible. But will you please repeat your answer so that the courts may hear?
I said yes. I knew them both.
Is it a fact that for some months you had been what is known as walking out with Joseph Hardy?
Yes, I did go out with him quite a bit.
But was the attachment somewhat deeper than that? Did not Hardy consider himself virtually engaged to you?
Well, he may have done, but, well, I didn't think of it that way. I've never actually said yes.
During this period, you were also seeing Harry Oakes.
Yes.
Please try and speak up.
Yes, that's what I mean. I was going out with Harry as well, and also a couple of other boys from time to time. But, Joe, I don't like to think that anything was settled.
But it was Hardy who was your most frequent companion.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, I liked dancing, and Joe's a good dancer.
And then, some 3 months ago, the situation changed.
Yes. We'd been to a dance at the exchange, Joe and me, and afterwards he walked me home. Oh, thanks, Joe. That was lovely. Good night.
Well, what do you mean, good night? What's he going to ask me?
Oh, it is late. Mum and Dad will be in bed.
All the more reason to ask me in.
Oh, dear, Joe, don't. That's enough.
Well, can't I even kiss you goodnight now?
Oh, it's not bad. Oh, you know what I mean. You get so intense.
And why shouldn't I with the girl I'm going to marry?
Who said anything about marrying?
I've asked you often enough.
And I never said yes. That's what I mean about you, Joe. You get too serious. Now, go off home. There's a good lad.
It's someone else, isn't he? Who is it? Is it Harry?
It's no one. I haven't made up my mind. Anyway, I don't want to get married yet.
And after this little scene, you decided to see rather less of Hardy and rather more of Harry Oakes.
Yes.
So much more that some 10 days before his death, you had made up your mind and had in fact agreed to marry Harry Oakes.
Yes.
You had no intention of the engagement remaining a secret.
No.
So it was natural that word of this very soon spread among the employees of the A1 Dairy. The following night, Hardy called at your house.
Yes, my mum and dad were at a whist club, and I was listening to some records.
I want to talk to you, honey.
Okay. I'm all by myself.
Good.
What did you want to say?
Oh, turn that music up. I can't talk with that going.
Well?
Is it true? About you and Harry?
Yes.
But why? He can't really be serious. Why didn't he give me another chance?
What was the point? I didn't love you. I love Harry.
Since when?
Well, it must have been there for months, only I didn't really know it. Must have been the reason why I could never take you seriously all those times you asked me to marry you.
I don't believe it. You must have been sneaking around there on my back. Arlene, you know I love you. You know I'd do anything for you. Give me another chance.
Oh, don't be silly, Joe. Don't you understand? I love Harry and I'm going to marry him. That's all there is to it.
But I love you. Look, Arlene, if you really mean that you're going to marry Harry, I'll stop it somehow. I'll kill him first. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll kill him.
And that was the last you saw of Hardy until the fatal day.
Yes.
Thank you, Miss Carter. That's all. Miss Carter, like my learned friend, I have no wish to prolong what must be for you a very painful episode. But in duty to my client, I must seek clarity on certain points. During the whole of your friendship with Hardy, did he ever behave badly towards you?
No.
Was he ever violent towards you?
No.
Did he ever show violence to anyone else?
No, if he had, I'd have stopped going with him.
He frequently declared his love for you. Did you believe him?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm sure he thought so. It was just that I didn't feel that way about him.
Have you ever heard him threaten anyone before?
No.
Have you ever threatened the life of anyone?
Of course not.
Are you sure? Have there not been times when something has upset you so much that you have said, I could murder him or I could kill him?
Oh, like that? Well, yeah, I suppose we all have.
I don't know about all of us, but you admit that you have.
Like that? Yes.
Is it not possible that the threats which Hardy offered in your presence were of a similar nature?
Now, it worked out in theory.
But is it possible?
Maybe.
Is it possible?
Yes, I suppose so.
Ah, thank you. It is so possible that, in fact, you did not believe in the threats at the time.
Of course I didn't. You don't expect people to go back killing other people.
What I expect is quite beside the point. You loved Harry Oakes?
Yes.
Speak up, Miss Carter. I have nearly finished.
Yes, I loved him.
You loved him. Miss Carter, will you be so good as to hold up your left hand for the court to see? Thank you. A very attractive ring. You loved him so much that even after this short period of time, you have again become engaged. That is all.
My lord, gentlemen of the jury, the murder for which the prisoner at the bar stands accused must surely be one of the most diabolical ever heard in this court. What diseased mind, you may ask, contrived such a means for revenge? But you will note that the defense did not, and quite rightly did not, as Polonius might have done, suggest that this was the very ecstasy of love. No suggestion has been put forward that the prisoner is insane, or at the time of the crime did not know or understand the consequences of his act. The police have proved that there can be no truth in the story of a runaway lorry. The evidence of exhaustive tests undertaken by Inspector Robbins has been attacked, but cannot be gainsaid. The defense counsel, in ruthless cross-examination, has tried to destroy the evidence of Miss Carter, but to no avail. Her testimony stands that threats were uttered by the accused. The facts are there. The threats were uttered, the death of Harry Oakes resulted, and the method has been proved. There can be no alternative other than that you find the prisoner guilty.
The prosecution has made much of the fact that there has been no plea of insanity. But there was no need for such a plea. Joseph Hardy is not only sane, but completely innocent of the action of which he is charged. Let us not be blinded by the apparent science of the police experiment. They may well be proof that in a certain set of circumstances, certain things may happen. But they are no proof of what really happened on the morning of May the 24th. From first to last, Hardy has given a clear account of what occurred. And neither time nor circumstances have made him change one detail of that story. What then is left? Small town gossip and tittle-tattle. Maybe he has uttered threats. But who under similar provocation has not made wild and pointless statements? It is with confidence that I leave you to pronounce the truth in this unfortunate case, which in my mind should never have been brought before the court.
Gentlemen of the jury, you have heard the evidence. The issue is quite clear. The opportunity was there. And if you believe that these wild threats were carried into fact by the method demonstrated by the prosecution, you have no alternative but to find the prisoner guilty as charged. If, on the other hand, you find that there has been insufficient proof and that the version of the events as related by the accused is indeed true, then it is your duty to declare the prisoner not guilty. No feelings as to his negligence should cloud your judgment. For these are matters beyond this court and have no relevance in the case before you. Should there be any matter on which you find you require clarification, you will inform the court, and it will be my duty to endeavor to enlighten you.
Well, you've heard all the relevant facts in the case. Would you say that Joseph Hardy was guilty or not guilty of the murder of Harry Oakes? In just a moment, we will bring you the verdict recorded in the actual trial upon which this dramatic presentation is based.
Solemnly court, gentlemen of the jury, have you arrived at a true and just verdict?
We have, my lord. We find the prisoner at the bar guilty of murder.